From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Honor AP, a length and a half. Authentic, rushy, running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
And Midnight Bizu, bounding past the Twin Spires. Six lengths in front with 100 yards to go. Motion of Motions up into second. Staring at the Empress, nothing late. Under the wire, the magnificent Midnight Bizu.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And now there's an eighth of a mile to the finish. Shotsky dinks down on the inside. Monday morning quarterback. But here is Max Player on the outside to take over the lead in deep stretch. And Max Player will win the Withers by almost three lengths.
Castlemaw's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Castlemaw and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the show that launched this great network, the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A very pleasant good morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you in the saddle with me for the next couple of hours across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or digitally listening to our live streaming or podcast of the show at horseracingradio.net. 7 days, 10 hours, 48 minutes, 20 seconds until the 2020 version of the Run for the Roses at Churchill Downs beneath the Twin Spires. We'll be there as your official radio home here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can join us beginning Tuesday morning for all of our coverage. It kicks off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings with three Derby countdown shows, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, the very same time frame as this program. And those shows hosted by Bobby Newman and Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, back in action again with us here on the network. They will take you through all of the Derby Week festivities, and they'll talk with owners and trainers and breeders and jockeys and handicappers Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Then we come back with our coverage of the Kentucky Oaks on Friday and all of our Derby Day programming. This show, live next Saturday, getting you set for the Run for the Roses. And then our coverage kicking off at 4 Eastern with the undercard next Saturday. And then segueing into our coverage of the Kentucky Derby, 146 in partnership with NBC Sports. Looking forward to all of that coming your way. You can go to horseracingradio.net to see a complete Derby Week broadcast schedule. Well, this also means that we are 68 days, 16 hours, and 56 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup, returning to Keeneland November 6th and 7th. So a lot of things to look forward to over the course of the next 68 days. And by the way, next Saturday, also the opening day of bow season here in Kentucky. For all of you deer hunters, who on earth reschedules the Kentucky Derby for the opening day of bow season? Just saying. All right. Two more win and you're in Breeders' Cup Challenge races set for this final Saturday in the month of August. You have the Grade 1 Sword Dancer at Saratoga. That's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf. You have the Grade 1 Pat O'Brien at Del Mar, where the winner will punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. The Sword Dancer has attracted a field of eight. The likely favorite is the 7-year-old son of Kitten's Joy, Saddler's Joy. He makes his fourth consecutive appearance in the Sword Dancer. I love horses like this. Last night, for those of you who stayed up with us and tuned in to our coverage of the Charlestown Classic, you heard us talk about War Story making a fourth appearance in that race. Those old hickory horses that just continue to show up year in, year out, stay in good form, compete at a high level. They are so cool. And Saddler's Joy, remember, he won the Sword Dancer in his very first try back in 2017. Didn't run as well in 2018. He was sixth. And then came back last year with a big effort, beating a neck in that event. So this is a horse, again, 7 years old, that just continues to do his thing. Good luck to Sadler's Joy and to all the contenders in the Sword Dancer. It's race 9, post time 5:43 Eastern. It is one of three graded stakes on the Saratoga card later today. You have the grade 1 Forgo, and then you have the grade 3 Amsterdam. Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen saddles the morning line favorite in the Amsterdam, Yapin, which, by the way, is a holly shrub or a small tree in the southern U.S. I know, its bitter leaves are sometimes brewed as tea. Google's a wonderful thing. The son of Uncle Mo, a perfect 2-for-2 to begin his young career. And after Steve gets past the Amsterdam, he'll set his sights on the Run for the Roses next Saturday. Well, he'll be in search of his very first win in that race. Here's a guy in Steve Asmussen that has trained winners than any trainer in the sport, barring Dale Barry. He'll look to add a Derby victory to his credit when he saddles Max Player next Saturday in the Run for the Roses. Remember, Max Player has gotten this far, was recently transferred from the barn of Linda Rice. So she got him this far. Steve's going to try and push him over the finish line and try to find a way to turn the tables on Tis the Law. Remember, Max Player finishing behind Tis the Law in both the Belmont and the Traverse Stakes, third in both of those races. So he'll try to find a way to turn the tables at Churchill Downs. And Steve's going to be with me after my first break here at 8:15 Eastern to talk about Yapin in today's Amsterdam and look ahead to next Saturday's Kentucky Derby. The Pat O'Brien at Del Mar, 8 horses also entered into that race later today. Flagstaff for trainer John Sadler, the 5-2 morning line favorite. The son of Spitestown looking to get back to his winning ways following a fourth place finish behind McKenzie in the grade 2 triple bend on June 7th. You also have Giant Expectations, who figures to get some play in the Pat O'Brien. The 7-year-old New York bred will be making his first start. Let's see, since the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile in November. He was 10th that day, hoping for better when he returns in the Pat O'Brien later this afternoon. Trainer Pete Miller will saddle Giant Expectations. He's also going to saddle last year's juvenile champion Storm the Court in the Derby next Saturday. So I'll get a chance to talk to Pete. He's going to get up early. Well, he's up early every day. But he'll join us very early on the West Coast. 5:35 Eastern, for those of you up early listening to me in the Western time zone, 8:35 here on the East Coast. That's race 10, by the way, the Pat O'Brien, 6:38 Pacific, 9:38 Eastern, the post time for the Pat O'Brien. Michael Herner from Gainesway going to be with me at 8:50 Eastern. He is the co-owner of Spanish Love Affair. 6-5 morning line favorite in the Sharp Susan Stakes at Gulfstream later today. The daughter of Cara Conti rolled to an 11-length maiden win in her debut at Gulfstream on July 23rd. Boy, did she look good. And she's getting all the respect with that morning line. And she should. She looks very, very talented. And I'll talk to Michael 8:50 Eastern about her. 9 o'clock, I'm going to welcome in my good friend Sean Clancy from the Saratoga Special. We'll pour a fresh cup of coffee and he'll talk about his past couple of columns that he has written in the special that's called A Cup of Coffee. So he's been doing that for 20 years now, and they are really fantastic. So I'll get a chance to talk to Sean 9 o'clock Eastern time. And then at 9:20, I'll be joined by consigner Stuart Morris, who will help me look ahead to the upcoming yearling sale season. And it's right around the corner. Usually, we've already had the Fasig-Tipton Saratoga sale, both the open sale and then the New York bred sale. And we're starting to look ahead to Keeneland September. Well, Fasig-Tipton rescheduling their yearling showcase to Kentucky this year. They moved it from Saratoga to Kentucky because of the situation with COVID, of course. So that Fasig-Tipton selected yearling showcase now going to be held September 9th and September 10th. The Keeneland September sale will follow September 13th to the 25th. And I'll get a chance to talk to Stuart not only about the horses that he's going to be selling and some of the big-time horses that he has sold over the years, but we'll talk about the environment, the market, Will the sales be as strong as what we've seen in the past couple of years, considering that many people are going to be buying horses remotely? There will be people on site, but not the numbers that we're used to seeing. Things will be completely different this year. And I'll talk to Stuart about some of the new protocols in place, how that's affecting him on the consignor side, and what he's hearing from buyers. How is this all going to work? 9:20 Eastern. We'll talk some sales. All right, poll question. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to weigh in. Looking ahead to next Saturday's Kentucky Derby, the poll question is this. Will Belmont and Travers winner, Tis the Law, sweep 2020's version of the Quadruple Crown? Will Travers winner, Tis the Law, sweep 2020's version of the Quadruple Crown? And you're going to get three choices, pretty easy, just click one of them. Heck yeah, no shot. And the third one is Quadruple Crown. Come on, Baron, get a clue. What are you talking about? Well, the Belmont, the Travers, the Derby, and the Preakness. Say what you want about the spacing of the races and the new structure this year and the fact that this is now being run in the fall, and that, and I've said it many times on this program, this Kentucky Derby next Saturday is really a... It is completely different than your traditional Kentucky Derby that is run on the first Saturday in May. What you're asking horses to do now as three-year-olds, late in the season when they're usually getting ready to point to the Breeders' Cup and start facing older horses, is totally different than when you're asking them to go a mile and a quarter on the first Saturday in May. And the horses that are going to be in the starting gate next Saturday, many of those horses wouldn't have been in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May. And that's not taking anything away from them. They've done what they were supposed to do to get to the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in September. But keep in mind, it's a Kentucky Derby really in name only, not your traditional Kentucky Derby. So I give you a non-traditional poll question. That Quadruple Crown, if he could pull it off, I mean, come on. People want to complain about the structure, about the spacing. Give me a break. You win four majors, all right? We wouldn't be talking about Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson if they win four golf tournaments and they're restructured and different dates and all this, and they win four majors in the same season. It's one hell of a grand slam. If Tis the Law can pull it off, that is one unbelievable accomplishment. The Belmont, the Travers, the Derby. Will Tis the Law sweep 2020's version of the Quadruple Crown? I want to hear from you. I'll update the poll question as we move throughout the show later today. All right, coming up next, I kick it off with Steve Asmussen. We'll talk about the Derby next week, and we'll also talk about Yoppin in today's Amsterdam. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Kentucky Derby. The most exciting 2 minutes in sports.
Mindless Bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
And it is all Barbaro in a sublime performance.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby.
American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
Saturday, September 5th, right here on HRRN.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Pomeroy, who strikes the lead. Smoke Coombe and Bowana Charlie. Last down the backstretch, it's Pomeroy and Bowana Charlie. Pomeroy holding on, narrow lead. Bowana Charlie has the momentum. Bowana Charlie has the lead. On the wire, Bowana Charlie lasts the first to beat Pomeroy by 3/4 of a length.
Holy Boss and Ruck White come down to the final 16th with Holy Boss in front. Holy Boss and Ricardo Santana Jr. will win the Amsterdam by 2.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you once again this morning. And a little trip down memory lane for our next guest, Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. He has saddled actually 3 winners of the Amsterdam. He won it for the first time in Bowana Charlie. That call you just heard from Tom Durkin. Came back and won it again the following year with Santana Strings. And then wrapped up a third one with Holy Boss in 2015. Larry Colmus had the call of that race. If he can win with Yoppin later today, it will be a 4th win for Steve. And he will tie Todd Pletcher at the top of the list for trainers who have saddled the most winners of this graded stake. And Steve is with me now here on HRRN. Steve, appreciate the visit on a busy morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you get a chance to equal Todd Pletcher. You're going to have to beat him with a horse that you previously trained in Basin if you're going to accomplish that feat later today. But boy, Yoppin looks like he could be the real deal.
Extremely talented horse. He's jumping off in very deep water with only 2 races in him. The unique circumstances of this year where the Amsterdam is actually run after the Allen Jerkins and in late August as opposed to early in the Saratoga meet makes it different.
When did you first know that this horse could really run, Steve?
When Hobie Kite worked him at Miami in 20-3 for the Fazek Tipton 2-year-old in training sale.
Yeah, that'll kind of tip his hand a little bit, won't it?
Yes, yes. I mean, he's an extremely talented horse. You know, very excited to have him for Bill and Corinne Heidelbro. They've showed a great amount of patience with him, and hopefully they'll be rewarded for that patience with a graded stakes win today.
Yeah, you mentioned the timing of this race being a little different here in 2020 with the revamped stakes schedule. Was this kind of the goal all along when you kind of started him and you saw the stakes schedule in New York and you said, okay, this is one that we can point for to get
him
going?
We were off a little later than expected with him. Felt that we had originally planned on running him late last year in New Orleans at the fairgrounds. Had some very minor issues that we gave him some time to get over. And so we are later getting him started this year than it was originally planned. And as you mentioned, with the pandemic altered stake schedule everywhere, feel that this is very deep water, accomplished field, all kinds of respect for long weekend. I've run against him on multiple occasions. When the Amsterdam falls in this year's calendar, I feel that Yao Pan deserves this opportunity.
Yeah, and you have a horse to the inside of you in Basin that you know extremely well. He has been in your care until today's race. When that happens, Steve, you have intimate knowledge of that horse. Is there any kind of, I don't know, I'll call it an advantage that you can gain from knowing the competition so well?
I don't believe so. You know, I feel that for us to have success, we need to concentrate on from point A to point B. What is best for each individual horse from a pace scenario, how aggressive we are, all of the above, getting them to the wire as soon as we can sorts out most of your issues with who you're running with.
As I was introducing you, those three previous victories in this race, and we heard the calls of a couple of them with Buana, Charlie, and Holy Boss, but you think back to that day, believe it or not, 16 years ago with Buana, Charlie. It's hard to believe it's been 16 years since he was strutting his stuff. He was really good, Steve.
Nice horse up to one turn mile. The first better horses that I was fortunate enough to train for the Heidelbros. And luckily they've hung in there, and we've continued to have some extremely nice horses and some success.
What do you remember about the day 5 years ago with Holy Boss?
It was probably the best race he had run to that point. I thought he really stepped up. Ricardo gave him an excellent ride that day, and he stamped himself as a serious three-year-old sprinter with his victory in the Amsterdam. It was 6.5 back then. With the altered schedule and it being 3/4, makes it a little different this year.
Visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Steve, next Saturday you shift your focus to the Run for the Roses, and you're going to try and win your first Kentucky Derby with Max Player, who is a horse that is just coming into air for the very first time. What do you know about Max Player?
He came into the barn in excellent physical and mental condition. Now, Linda Rice did a wonderful job with him. Connections felt that for him to, with his very respectable third place finish in the Belmont and the Travers, to turn the tables just for him to be as acclimated to Churchill Downs and the surface and the surroundings as possible for his one run at the Kentucky Derby.
When you get a horse into your barn, especially a high caliber horse like this, Steve, and they're kind of new to you and to your program, what are some of the first things that you do as you start getting them ready to get to the races for you?
Well, with Max Player individually, it was watch all of his previous races, observing, feel very comfortable with his attitude, with his demeanor, with how he travels, and have went to the racetrack at Churchill with him, got a few gallops in him, relatively easy work for him by himself, and then added company to it from there. So from a timing standpoint, felt very good about the 3 weeks we had at that point leading up to the Derby. I feel that he is settled in well. Love the fact that he jumped right into the feed tub with the change and has done really well.
Interesting to hear you say that you go back and watch the replays of all of his previous races. It's a lot like a coach who goes back and watches game film. What things stood out to you, Steve, when you watched him and you saw those previous races? What were some of the things that jumped out to you that you picked up on?
We feel that he's a horse that keeps coming. You know, he got a very good action. It uses it very efficiently, and don't feel that he will appreciate the mile and a quarter.
You know, Steve, I said earlier there is only one trainer in the history of the sport that has saddled more winners than you, and, of course, that's Dale Baird. You're now closing in on 9,000 career victories. The Kentucky Derby, man, that's a tough one to get past. It's eluded you, but you've been tantalizingly close on a couple of occasions with Looking at Lee and Nero, and we remember Curlin finishing third and Gunrunner. Why is that race so difficult to add to the resume?
Because it's most coveted prize in horse racing. But on a very positive note, I'm undefeated in the Kentucky Derby in September.
Yeah, great point. I guess that's a good way to look at it. And we'll see if Max Player can keep Steve Asmussen undefeated in September in the Run for the Roses. Which one of those, Steve, which one of those keeps you up most at night, the ones that you were so close with?
It's a situation where if the Derby was run in September on those years, would Curlin or Gunrunner been beatable? They're just horses that came around and continued to improve, and the circumstances of this year allow for that. If the Derby would have been run in May, you would have had a considerably different field, and it'll be extremely interesting, but I'm not... don't worry about looking back. You just worry about looking forward. If the next one you run wins, we'll be okay.
All right, so finish the sentence for me then. If Max Player wins next Saturday, to win the Kentucky Derby for Steve Asmussen would be what?
It would be next. I mean, it's race. We've been very fortunate, very blessed in horse racing, and have had accolades that you would never have dreamed of. But next morning the alarm clock will go off. You better get up, go to work, because you won't get a head start because of what you did yesterday. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this sport. You know, no matter how bad yesterday was, they won't put you behind the gate. No matter how good yesterday was, they're not going to put you in front. You got to wash, rinse, repeat. Just keep going.
Oh, this has been quite a year for you on a personal level, too, with your family. You're a wonderful family man, and your son, Keith, has started down the path of riding races, and he won his first race. You were there. Keith was on this program as our industry star of the week maybe a month ago or so, and that moment, I know you said that was – you were as proud that day, and that was as special a moment as you've had in this sport, maybe even more special than all the wins.
Exceeded it easily. Keith James, he's 5'10". For the pandemic, in his fourth year at the University of Texas, Ms. Combs School of Business in the master's program, when they went online and he asked, about coming to Oaklawn and getting on horses, and just it allowed for him to be getting on horses, exercising horses for a prolonged period of time that allowed him to get to a fitness and for him to have the discipline and the talent to get done what he has done is extremely impressive and extremely proud of his accomplishments. And for me being in a racing family, my dad riding before me, my old brother Cash, the success he had, it's just to see your son fulfill a dream of his to ride, to actually ride races, let alone have success, is hard to describe.
Yeah, he told me he had to be persistent, too. He had to keep on you and your wife, Julie, and keep asking to do this, but he finally cracked you somehow. He finally broke you.
Well, very concerning, with his height, to get to that weight safely and responsibly. But as I mentioned, the discipline that he has shown to do so and to ride successfully, just extremely proud of him. And him in racing, it's not a no keep score sport. They're not going to hand it to you. You got to physically do it. And for him to ride races professionally, ride races with success, that is an accomplishment that will always be his.
Now, Steve Asmussen with me here on HRN. Steve, listen, appreciate the visit. Good luck in the Amsterdam today. Continued success with the family, and all the best in the Run for the Roses next Saturday.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Steve Asmussen, Hall of Famer, looking to add the Kentucky Derby to his resume. I loved his answer. It would be next. It would be next. A lot of trainers will tell you it would be everything. It would be the culmination of all the years of hard work. It would be the greatest thing we've ever done. And the way Steve Asmussen looks at things is a bit differently. It would be next. I'm sure he'd love to have that one on his resume. All right, going to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When I come back, we'll turn our attention westward to the Pat O'Brien Stakes. I'll talk with Peter Ertin about his contender in there, and we'll look ahead to Storm the Court going next Saturday at Churchill Downs. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
There have been match races, and there have been match races in thoroughbred racing. Some have fizzled, some have turned into classic confrontations of the equine sport. On October 20th, 1923, there was one that by anybody's measure or means falls into the latter category. At that date in the Roaring Twenties at Belmont Park, 50,000 patrons were amassed neath a brilliant yellow sun on a mild autumn day, with Mother Nature having reached down with tender tendrils to paint the surrounding countryside in the brilliant hues of the season to see a horse race. Oh, there had been large crowds at Belmont in the past, but never of the size of the assemblage gathered on that day. This one came filled with patriotism and the sporting instinct. It was an event amongst events. The enormous crowd was overflowed from the clubhouse into the grandstand and on out across the lawn, and provided the exclamation point to one of the greatest spectacles in all the annals of sport. The purse was $100,000, the racing surface muddy, and the combatants were the great Zeb, Harry F. Sinclair's American Standard Bearer, to be piloted by the redoubtable Earl Sandy, and the superb British representative Papyrus, with Steve Donahue handling the lines. Zeb went postered at 4-5, Papyrus even money. Papyrus had several excellent workouts since arriving in America. Zeb had not been at his best of late, having incurred a skin ailment, but on this day, in this race, they both performed like the champions that they were. From a standing start, Papyrus got away very quickly, jumping on out to a length and a half lead before the two had gone a single furlong. Zeb, slow to settle into stride, made up the ground quickly and dropped down along the rail under Sandy. By the time they had gone a quarter, Zeb had gained the lead and was full of run. Sandy took a strong hold and was rating his mount nicely. At the half-mile marker, it was Zeb by a length, and on down the backside they went in the 10-furlong race, with Donahue on Papyrus, asking his stalwart for just a bit more, while Sandy, in turn, let out a notch on Zeb, holding on to a one-length lead as the two thundered into the far turn. They continued to hold their positions in what had become a cat-and-mouse game between riders and horses on around the turn, with Donahue and Papyrus unable to close any ground. It looked at that point as if the courageous British champion was indeed a beaten horse. As they swung off the turn to the head of the stretch, Zeb increased his margin under the astute handling of Sandy. Bending low, Sandy appeared to cluck and whisper something into Zeb's ear, and he began to widen his margin as a huge roar swelled up from the vast multitude in attendance. Zeb literally ate up huge chunks of ground with giant strides, but Papyrus fell further behind. They had only a furlong to the wire, and it was Zeb by four open lengths. As they galloped to the finish with Zeb in full command, sending sprays of mud up before the noisy crowd, Sandy guided the conquering hero home magnificently with every leap, ultimately winning by eight open lengths. It was a stirring performance by Zeb, and the single most crushing defeat ever suffered by the British great Papyrus. The rancocous colt of Harry Sinclair had not run a particularly fast race, but under the handy guy named Sandy, he had proved himself to be an international champion and had upheld the honor and prestige of American racing. Zeb versus Papyrus, Belmont Park, October 20th, 1923. A great moment in racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus Store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus Store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Ottiano. Talk horses, and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
First crop two-year-olds by Airdrie Studs Upstart are the talk of the industry. At the OBS March sale, all six offered were sold for an average of $260,000, a spectacular return on his $10,000 stud fee. The $600,000 sale-topping colt out of Blue Burrow was one of two upstarts purchased by leading agent Mike Ryan, who said, "We won't find a better horse this year." Upstart has sired 101 first crop juveniles of 2020 and stands at Airdrie Stud for $10,000 stands and nurses. Think about it.
The 2020 Thoroughbred Owner Conference is being offered virtually November 3rd and 4th. We are committed to providing the Owner Conference in as safe and healthy an environment as possible. Experience 9 panels with expert speakers, moderators, and a keynote address. Ask questions of speakers from your home, office, or anywhere you are. Visit ownerview.com to register and be part of this important event while staying safe, healthy, and comfortable. Wherever you are, we'll be there. Visit ownerview.com today.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
Storm the Court is the leader. Here's Longshot and Odor moving on the outside. 8 Rings is under pressure right behind them. And Odor at 25-1 has swept up on the outside and has now grabbed the lead with a furlong to go. Storm the Court tries to battle on. Farther out, it's Wrecking Crew. It's going to be an upset here. Dennis's moment is still last as they come to the final 16th. Storm the Court battles on inside of An Odor. These two long shots will decide the juvenile, and it is Storm the Court who won it. And Odora was second, Wrecking Crew was third, and then Scabbard in a big upset in the juvenile.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you, as always, here on the program. That was Larry Colmus with the call of last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Santa Anita, and what an effort it was for 45-1 long shot. Storm the Court, who would go on to be voted the champion juvenile of 2019. He has yet to win since that effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, 0-5, but he's been knocking on the door, and he appears to be rounding back into form for trainer Peter Erton, who is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pete, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good, okay. Good. I appreciate you doing this. I know you're up early anyway, but we're talking about 5:35 out on the West Coast. So appreciate you doing this early in the morning. Let's start with Storm the Court, since I was just talking about him, and then we'll turn our attention to Giant Expectations in the Pat O'Brien.
Uh-huh.
But I said Storm the Court looks like he's starting to kind of turn the corner now and get back into form.
He's definitely doing well, training well. He's been a good race on grass, I thought, for his first try on. He'd run against a pretty good horse that's a pro on turf, and didn't get the race that we wanted, but it was still something to look forward to maybe try again in the future.
Yeah, it's at least something that he has, you know, kind of in his corner. How about next Saturday? You're looking ahead to the Kentucky Derby, 1.25 miles, back on the dirt again. What gives you the confidence that he can win the Kentucky Derby next week?
Well, it's going to be a tough race, but he's earned the right to go, and that's he's trained well for it. We'll see how he works today. He's going to have one more easy 5/8 today. Gallop out a little 3/4, and he's the kind of horse that will occasionally show you that huge effort. And we're hoping we see it next week. But he couldn't be doing
it. If you recall, I'll remind our listeners, Pete, that, you know, he didn't win his prep race for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year either. He was third in the Grade One American Pharoah, and then, as you said, stepped up with a huge effort, which he's capable of doing it at any time. Are you seeing some similarities with the way he's coming into the Derby compared to the way he came into the Breeders' Cup?
Well, I think he's in a good place right now. His weight is about as good as it's been. I've never seen him jump into his feed tub so well. His work last week was a bit quick, but the way he did it was nice. So when he trains well, he usually runs well. So as far as training well, I mean by how fast he likes to go. He tends to like to get it going pretty good, and sometimes he gets away from us a bit. But right now I've got no complaints about anything. We'll see how he travels. That's always been a task for him to travel, as you know. But we're all looking forward to it.
Talking with trainer Peter Ertin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pete, I just had Steve Asmussen on in the previous segment, and I asked him to finish the sentence for me. I said, look, to win the Kentucky Derby next Saturday would be what? So I'll ask you to do the same thing. If Pete Ertin were to win the Kentucky Derby, what would it be?
It would be a career. I mean, it would be like, I thought the Breeders' Cup was huge. I never figured anything like that, but to win the Kentucky Derby would just be an amazing day for me and my family and my crew, and it just would be something we would take with us forever. I think anybody that's ever trained a racehorse would have to say the Kentucky Derby would be the number one on their bucket list.
Yeah, as we know, Pete, the Derby is run now the first Saturday in September this year because of all the restructuring. Would you have preferred to see it run on the first Saturday in May with Storm the Court, or are you happy it's where it is?
I think we're in a better place now with him than we were back then, to be honest. That being said, we'll see how it turns out, but he didn't run too well in Arkansas, which could have been a prep for it. So that didn't turn out too well. But the race in Ohio, I thought, was a very good effort on his part, considering the trip he had. He lost so much ground and still was a gamer and just kept coming. So the distance obviously is the same as it would have been back then, but I just think he's in a better place right now.
All right, let's turn our attention to later today at Del Mar. The Pat O'Brien Stakes, Giant Expectations, 7-2 on the morning line. We haven't seen him in action since the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Santa Anita last year. Talk about Giant Expectations and look ahead to today's race.
Well, he's coming off of a layoff, a pretty good layoff, as a matter of fact, but he's fresh. He seems to run well off the layoff. I think he won the Pat O'Brien last year he ran second off of a 3-month layoff. So he does tend to do well with time between races. He had a mild minor injury last year after the Breeders' Cup. It took a few months to heal. And, he's a young 7-year-old and he couldn't be doing any better. Is he as good as he was last year? He's not showing any signs that he's not. So we're definitely looking forward to an effort by him on a track that he loves.
Yeah, you're right. 4 starts at Del Mar, a win and 2 seconds. One of those seconds, just a head defeat in this race a year ago. Of course, he won the Pat O'Brien in 2017. And when I looked that up, mm-hmm. Pete, I loved seeing the fact that the jockey you gave a leg up to that day was a guy by the name of Gary Stevens. Remember him?
Me and Gary have had a lot of fun in our race days, that's for sure. He's lost track of many stakes he's won for us, but we miss Gary, and I'm sure he'll be watching, and I'm sure he'll be rooting for us.
Yeah, I'm sure he definitely will. You give a leg up today to Umberto Rispoli, who is really on a roll, too. He's riding very, very well right now. Tell me about the decision to put Umberto up.
Well, he just has so much confidence in him, and he's worked his horse a few times. He knows him. And we love our draw. He always seems to do well when he's close to outside. Umberto can't be doing any wrong right now. Especially for us. He's won, I think, 5 races for us at the meet. And he's just our kind of go-to guy right now.
Well, Pete, listen, you're no stranger to winning big races and no stranger to being around good horses. We'll see if Giant Expectations can give you another victory in that Pat O'Brien. And send you on to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Keeneland in November. Should be a lot of fun to watch.
Thank you. We can't wait.
Now, well, good luck today. Good luck next Saturday at Churchill Downs, and appreciate you getting up early and doing this with me this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime, Mike. We'll see you soon.
All right, you got it. Pete Erton here on HRRN. We'll see. Giant expectations, as you heard him say. Long layoff, a lot of questions to answer. This obviously is not the ultimate goal. Yeah, you want to win. It's a grade one. It's a win and you're in. You want to win. But this is not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal will come at Keeneland in early November. But he likes Del Mar. Really likes Del Mar. And I keep saying grade one, Pat O'Brien. Grade two. I always had it in my head that it was a grade one. Grade two, Pat O'Brien. But winning you're in for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And you have a horse that loves Del Mar. You have a horse that's run well in this race before. You have a horse, as Pete pointed out, that's run fresh and run very well fresh. And he's going to be fresh this time. Hasn't started since November. And he gets a red hot jockey. So we'll see. A lot of things going in his favor, but it's a little bit of a tough assignment. Even tougher assignment maybe for juvenile champion Storm the Court next Saturday at Churchill Downs. Pete said he can jump up and run a big race from time to time. He's going to need it. He's going to need to take that Breeders' Cup juvenile effort, at least that effort, and maybe even a little bit more. But he's running well. He's training well. And he's going to have a jockey. Flavien Pratt has been riding Storm the Court. He is not going to make the trip to Churchill Downs. He's going to have a jockey who knows that surface extremely well, and that's jockey Julian Leperu. Still the juvenile champion. We'll see if he can pull off another shocker. He'll be another big price next Saturday at Churchill Downs. Of course, we'll be there with all that coverage. Remind you once again that our coverage begins on Tuesday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, the first of three Derby countdown shows, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will visit with owners, trainers, breeders, jockeys, handicappers, several special guests lined up throughout the week. They'll get you ready for the Run for the Roses. And then we'll flip it around and turn our attention to live racing on Friday with the Kentucky Oaks. And Saturday, this program next Saturday morning, a full Kentucky Derby edition. And then our undercard coverage kicking off at 4 o'clock leading in to our exclusive national radio coverage of the Kentucky Derby, which is presented by MassMutual. And that's all in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports. Head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast of all of our shows, but also to check out the schedule for next week. It's going to be a very, very busy week here on HRN. All right, I'll get to another break. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to South Florida and Gulfstream Park. We'll take a look at Spanish Love Affair, who is the favorite in the stakes race there. I'll visit with Michael Hernan from Gainesway next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caracondi has won.
Passion.
It's Caracondi winning by a barren neck.
The underdog, Caracondi!
Gainesway stallion Caracondi, a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5. Caracondi hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caracondi's first crop of three-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caracondi at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The Kentucky Derby runs here. HRRN is your radio home for the Kentucky Derby, Saturday, September 5th. We'll bring you full coverage of the Run for the Roses, as well as all of the stakes on the Derby undercard. Plus, Kentucky Oaks coverage on September 4th, and our Derby countdown shows Tuesday through Thursday of Derby Week. Don't miss a minute of the action. The Kentucky Derby, right here on HRRN. Go to horseracingradio.net for a full schedule of events and to listen live.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
And a quarter of a mile left to go. It's Spanish Love Affair who comes away with the lead for Victor Lebrun by three quarters in 1:14.3, less than a quarter of a mile to go. And Spanish Love Affair is kicking clear with authority. Spanish Love Affair by five, by six. Here's a good late run from West Side Girl to try to get into second, but nobody gets to Spanish Love Affair. She's an eye-catching 8 or 9 length winner. Up second is West Side Girl. Back to third, Take Me As I Am, then Beach Chick and Audrey.
Well, how about that debut for the daughter of Gainesway stallion Cara Conti? Spanish Love Affair rolling to an 11-length maiden win on July 23rd at Gulfstream, and she's back in action later today as the 6-5 morning line favorite in the Sharp Susan Stakes, and maybe a stepping stone to even bigger things to come for this very talented runner. And I'm joined now by her co-owner, Michael Hernan from Gainesway. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for that introduction. Exciting day for me personally with Spanish Love Affair. Very promising young two-year-old daughter of Cara Conti. She showed plenty of ability in her debut and now steps up to stakes company. And the race will go later today at 4:48 at Gulfstream. And we're hoping she shows up. We expect she will. She's done very well since her maiden win. She's been in the tub. She's eating great, looks great. She breathes very well last Sunday, and she's in the capable hands of Nicholas Tomlinson, who's assistant for Mark Caffey based at Palm Meadows, and we're excited.
Well, you should be excited, Michael. And the story of Spanish Love Affair goes back to the Keeneland September yearling sale a couple of years ago when she was hip number 3075, late in the sale and consigned by Gainesway. And you just kind of had a feeling that she could be something special.
Well, it was quite impromptu. It was another day of selling at Keeneland. We had already had a great sale, and we had a number of horses coming up and just trying to promote these horses and elevate their price and give people confidence to bid in them. And at the last moment, she's walking out of the inner back circular ring into the chute, and I caught Mark Cassie's eye, and I just pointed at her. And he took a look, and he came back to me, and I showed him the report, which was clean, the vet report, that is. And I said, I like her. And he says, well, I like her too. And I said, well, I'll go in with you 50% if you get her. And he said, well, great, I'll have a go. And Mark signed the ticket at 35,000. And, it was impromptu. It was basically intuition. I hadn't had a plan in my head. It just all fell into place. And suddenly we own this nice filly who's by Caracanti, who have great confidence in. And the filly has pedigree. She's a half sister to a grade one winner on turf, and looks like she has good ability. She showed Mark talent, and then he gave her a breeze on the turf. And he said, you know, I thought I had a nice filly, but I'm beginning to wonder now, based on her turf work, she just might be very nice. So back today in the stake at Gulfstream, we're very hopeful and looking forward to the race.
You have had a relationship, Michael, and I'll call it a relationship, and you've been the biggest fan of the stallion from day one, Caracanti. He also has Sole Volante, who's pointed for the Kentucky Derby next Saturday. Talk about Caracanti and go back to the beginning for me for a minute here. And why have you believed in this horse from day one?
Frankly, he had shown really good racing ability from the beginning. He was a winner of the Prix Jacques Lagarde, grade one. Then he won the French 2000 Guineas, a very significant race that had already been won by former top Gainsway stallions such as Irish River, Green Dancer, Riverman, Blushing Groom. And then Caracanti came and to the U.S. and ran a remarkable race in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. He was in the 14 hole. He was 50-1 on the board. And he basically accelerated through the field, passing very good horses like they were, just ordinary runners. And he stopped the teletimer in 1:32 4/5 for the mile. And, it meant, that in the research on the horse, I mean, it was really, jumping out at me. You know, this horse can really run. And I spoke to Anthony Beck about him. And, we like the pedigree, the speed of Stormcat. He's the son of Bernstein. And the third dam is the great Niesque. Who was raced by Stavros Niarchos and his daughter Maria Niarchos in the Flaxman Holding Silks. And I went over to France. I went to Chanty. It's 5 years ago now. And I met with Alan Cooper at the airport. Alan is the racing manager for Maria now. And we went down to Jonathan Peace's stable in Chanty. And looked at the horse. I liked him. I thought he'd develop well, which he certainly has. He's put on good weight, and he likes the bluegrass of Gainsway and the feed program. And once you get a horse in the breeding shed and that testosterone starts flowing, they really develop and come forward. And he's an excellent breeding horse. He's highly fertile, and he's already shown real ability as a stallion, and I think he's going to continue to move forward in that regard. And maybe he's given us a real quality filly here in Spanish Love Affair.
Well, Michael, you and the team at Gainsway have done remarkable work with him and all the stallions, and we'll encourage people to go to Gainsway.com to learn more about Caracanti, and encourage people to tune in later today at Gulfstream Park with Spanish Love Affair as she looks to take the next step to what could be a very promising career. So good luck there, Michael, and really appreciate you taking a few minutes with me here this morning.
Yeah, just the last comment. Don't forget next Friday, the great filly that was fortunate enough to co-breed, namely Monomoy Girl. She had a terrific work last Sunday. Florent Giroux gave me a quick call. He's very happy with the filly. She loves Churchill. She won the Oaks, as you know, and then came back and beat older fillies and mares in the Breeders' Cup. This staff, daughter of Tapazar, who, of course, is the son of Tapit. So, Monomoy Girl, she's ready to roll next Friday, the La Troyenne Stakes, grade one at Churchill Downs.
All right, good stuff. Michael Hernan, Gainsway, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Michael, good luck.
Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. Yeah, Spanish Love Affair. She does look like she could be any kind. We'll find out, though. The waters get deeper later today in that stakes race at Gulfstream Park. Don't forget, if you're looking for live streaming and replays from nearly any racetrack out there, you can check out RTN.TV, the racetrack television network. RTN has the most HD content of any streaming service, and it's available on many devices, including TVs, PCs, tablets, smartphones, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. And how about this? As a special treat for all of our listeners, if you use the promo code capital HRRN, all caps, you're going to get your first 7 days of live streaming and replays absolutely free. So what are you waiting for? Visit RTN.TV to sign up today. I've told you, we have it in our studio in Lexington, and we can watch multiple tracks. We have four TVs hooked up to RTN. We can watch them all over the country, just like you're sitting there at the racetrack. It is so cool. RTN.TV, and be sure to use promo code HRRN. All right, busy second half of the program comes up next. I'll get to it right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And it's Authentic who's still very strong on the front end. And he pulls away with authority. Authentic is undefeated as he will romp in the San Felipe. A very easy 2.5 lengths.
Gamine's running up the score. Oh, look at this fine filly romp here. John Velasquez lets her roll at the 16th pole, and she has absolutely destroyed the acorn field.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
It's Modernist toward the inside for Junior Alvarado. Major Fed closing. New York Traffic Gamely. And then Mel Mamoney. It's Modernist. Modernist and Junior Rivera and Junior Alvarado at 12-1. Modernist has won it.
Tom's Detas shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Detas.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Very, very busy morning. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.podcast. At your leisure, my interview with Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen, with trainer Peter Erton, and with Michael Hernan from Gainesway just a few moments ago. All of that was part of a busy first half of the program. The second half going to be equally as busy as I kick it off with my good friend Sean Clancy in just a couple of moments. Stuart Morris going to be with me at 9:20 Eastern time to begin to look ahead to the yearling sale season, which is fast approaching. The Fasig Tipton selected yearling sale is coming up right after the Kentucky Derby, and then it's followed by the Keeneland September sale. You have the Fasig sale kicking off September 9th and September 10th, and the Keeneland September sale will be the 13th to the 25th. Poll question this morning. Will Belmont and Travers winner, Tis the Law, sweep 2020's version of the Quadruple Crown? And you can go to @HRRN on Twitter to let me know your thoughts. You can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And so many people already chiming in. You have three choices. Heck yeah, no shot, and then the third one, Quadruple Crown. Yeah, come on, Baron, get a grip. Anyway, 64% of the vote coming in saying, heck yeah, he's going to sweep the Quadruple Crown. He's already taken the first two legs with the Belmont and the Travers. He'll try the Derby as the likely favorite next Saturday, and then a month later in early October, the Preakness Stakes. What an accomplishment that would be. Well, Sean Clancy is with me now, which means it's time to pour a fresh cup of coffee here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. One for me, one for Sean. And I once again say, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. How's it going there?
Everything is good. What do you think? Does Tis the Law pull off the quote-unquote Quadruple Crown?
Yeah, I think he does. I mean, I haven't seen any flaws in the horse. He has really not missed a beat since you know, making his debut last summer. I mean, I just...
Yep, looks like we lost Sean. All right, we'll get him back. Yeah, look, I said this earlier when I opened the show that forget about the difference in the distance of the Belmont Stakes. Yeah, I know it was cut back from a mile and a half. I get it. Not the test of the champion. Not the final leg of the Triple Crown in a five-week window. I get it. Forget about the fact that then you had, what, a month to the Travers and a month or so to the Derby and a month to the Preakness. Forget about all of that. If you have a horse that wins four majors, four grade ones like that, it's a hell of an accomplishment. Take nothing away from this horse. He has been very good all year long, and he's been consistent all year long. This would be one heck of an accomplishment. We do have Sean back. Sean, you were you dropped out as you were answering that question, but yeah, I mean, this horse,
you didn't like my
he's
answer?
The real deal. I guess not. Lee hung up on you.
we see what Lee thinks of that.
yeah. He didn't like the way you were going with that.
Exactly. I think the horse, I mean, I don't see any, I mean, I just don't, he just does not look vulnerable about anything. I mean, he just handles everything great. I've just been impressed with him. I think anybody's been impressed with him. He's done nothing wrong. I hope he does. I mean, I think it's one of those years when you definitely want something or need something to get excited about, root for, cheer on. I don't believe in the negativity around it. I mean, I think people just, you know, there's people who are going to be critical no matter what. I think if he wins it, he's a Triple Crown winner. I'm rooting for him. I think everybody's rooting for him. Cool horse, great connections. He's easy to root for, and I hope he gets it done.
You know, as you dropped out and we lost you there for a second, I had a flashback to the times that you were working with us on our race broadcast, and you'd be out in the paddock and you'd be in the middle of a report and we'd lose the connection somehow. And I'd always cover it by saying, well, Clancy must have stepped away and gone to the bar real quick. And it was the first thing that went through my mind when that connection dropped with us here this morning, too. A little coffee royale maybe for this cup of coffee segment.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you guys always quickly accuse me of going to the bar. It was never like maybe he's doing his homework or he's working on something or he found a great interview. It was always, Clancy went to the bar. Sounds like an old Irish ballad, probably.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, let's focus on the cup of coffee because that's what this segment is all about. And if folks go to thisishorseracing.com, they can download and read all of the Saratoga specials that you, your brother Joe, Tom Law, the entire team are putting together and have been putting together for the Saratoga meet, coming out twice a week, every Wednesday and every Saturday. So let's rewind to this past Wednesday's edition and your column Cup of Coffee that appears in the very end of the paper. It's called Family Portrait. Tell me about that piece.
That one, I got a little emotional again. I was just thinking back to life and about Saratoga. And, I went back and found out my mother had sent me these two old pictures of my family, 1973. And it's my older sister, Michelle, my brother, Joey, who everybody knows, and my other sister, Sheila. And my sister, that was in August. My sister Michelle, she died the following February, and I think it's really the last picture of all of us together. And I don't know. I just got to thinking about it. There's the four of us on the rail at Saratoga, about at the quarter pole, and Secretariat cantering to the start for the Whitney in the background. And so I just kind of wrote about that. I don't know. It's been one of those years for me. You know, I think for all of us, you just get real reflective and start thinking about stuff that, that's affected you in your life. And I don't know. It was just kind of a way to talk about life and how things change. And I wound up with Tom Law writing half of it, which I usually get accused of once a year from my readers that it's like, that wasn't your column. That was Tom Law's column, because I ran on with a quote from Tom Law for about 400 words. Which certainly helps when you need some fresh words. So Yeah, that one, I don't know, that was a tricky one. It was just, I don't know, it's just been, like I said, it's just been a weird kind of year. I think everybody feels that way. And, yeah, just got thinking about her and my family and Saratoga, what it's meant to me over the 50 years. I mean, no one seems to know if I've ever missed one. I'm sure, I guess I did somewhere along the line, but I know I've been every summer for the whole summer since 89. And this year, you know, obviously I'm not going to be there. And it was interesting out of the amount of readers that reached out and said, yeah, me too. I feel the same way. Mine, you know, mine goes back to, you know, 25 years or 40 years or back to, you know, 63 when I went up there to the Hot Walker. And that was, it was touching to kind of hear from people and about what Saratoga's meant to them over the years of their life and, you know, how it's affecting them. So, yeah, I just try to wrap it all up in one column.
That's one of the great things about Saratoga. And you and I have a similar story because my love affair with Saratoga also began in 1989 at the Traverse Stakes when Easy Goer won that year. And I can remember sitting at the picnic tables with my friends who, by the way, still to this day, well, of course, not this year, but they will still try to make it out there at least a couple of times a year and sometimes for a full week. And they live out of town now, but they'll try to come back and they'll try to sit at the picnic tables where everything kind of began. And I can, you know, remember those days vividly. And, you know, going to the Traverse Stakes, and I've had a year since 1989 like you. But that's one thing about Saratoga that just, it's so enchanting, and it creates so many memories. Like you talked about the portrait of everybody standing along the rail. It creates so many memories, and you know, I guess you could even take it a step further, Sean, and say that's one of the great things about racing in general. It's not just Saratoga. I hear people talk about Santa Anita and Del Mar and Gulfstream. I hear them talk about these places in the same fashion, but there's something special for us anyway about Saratoga.
Yeah, I mean, Saratoga is the one for me. I mean, I grew up right next to Delaware Park, so I have some great memories of that old place when we were growing up as kids. But you know, Saratoga goes back for my family. It goes all the way back to, you know, climbing in the horse van. My dad would drive the horse van. We'd leave at midnight because it's better for the horses and drive up there in one of those big Imperator six horse horse vans. And we'd make that left on Union Avenue at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:36. And, you know, that was our summer vacation. I mean, we didn't do much else beyond that. And, you know, you look back at your life and you see who was there, who wasn't, and how life has changed. And, I mean, I think that's important to remember about Saratoga, about horse racing, how it does affect your life, how, you know, the people and friends and family that you've shared it with over the years. And you look back at these special moments and, I mean, Saratoga is just that place for me. I mean, I got Annie's, my wife's phone number in Saratoga. I mean, I'll never forget it. She was 1989. I was so smitten by this Greek girl from Alabama who was in Saratoga for the weekend. And, I remember finally mustering up enough courage to get her phone number. I mean, before cell phones, before I could text her or tweet her or anything else. And, she wrote her phone number on the program and just ripped out the corner of the program with her phone number, handed it to me. And, you know, I called her from the University of Delaware a couple weeks later. And wasn't a fast relationship. We got married 17 years later, but we did get married. So, you know, you look back at those moments of, you know, horses you ran, horses you rode, horses you bet, friends you were with, family, you know, look, the horse racing, that's to me, that's what it's all about. It's just sharing it and experiencing that, that excitement, that level of being involved in something that you can share. To this day, I, you know, my father, I'm going to call him this morning and we'll talk racing. I mean, that's all we talk about. And, you know, we've shared that forever. So, I think that's really important to kind of remember about, and cherish about our sport.
Yeah, and as I say, it's not just Saratoga. People have these connections to and these moments that happen. I've heard people talk about moments at Oxarbon and Birmingham and Bowie and tracks that are no longer in existence anymore, and it just captures you. And, Yeah, very, very special. That's one of the great things about this sport and going to the races. And, you know, if you have a story that you want to share with us, just tweet to us, at HRRN. I'd love to hear your stories. If you have a story where maybe you're a little bit nostalgic and something that you and your family like to do, you and your friends enjoyed doing over the years, and a connection that you've had with this sport, I want to hear it. At HRN on Twitter, send me that now. RacingRadio.net. We'd love to hear from RN Nation. All right, Sean, let's turn our attention to your Saratoga special this morning. And the piece that you have with your cup of coffee is called In the Breed. And you have a picture of trainer Ronnie Breed Jr. Tell me about this.
That was a good one. He, the other day, I guess it was last weekend, the horse won big price New York bred on Sunday. I think it was the pick six day, I guess. And, you know, I love that about racing. You see a New York bred came down from Finger Lakes, hadn't run for 6 months, and, you know, leads every step, wins the race. And you look in there and you say, it says Ronald Breed Jr. You know, and you go, who in the world's Ronald Breed Jr.? And you start piecing it together. You find out that he was assistant trainer for Tom Morley for a few years. Maggie Wolfendale, no, you know, she mentioned it on TV. And then you look, then you think, oh, maybe that's the Breed family from Finger Lakes, and his owner trainer, Ronald Breed Sr. and Deborah Breed, the trainer. And you start piecing it together. And sure enough, it's this, you know, young kid. Well, young kid, he's 36 years old. That's how old I am now. I'm calling him a young kid. But, you know, getting started training on his own. That was his 12th starter, I think, of the year. First win at Saratoga. And, you know, and that's what's fun to me about riding and horse racing. You try to find out who this kid is, who the person is. Similar to Eddie Davis when he won his first race up there. I love writing those stories when you find somebody new, find somebody different, and you hear a story. And, you know, here's a kid that grew up on the backstretch of Finger Lakes, mucking, riding, grooming like a lot of us, and went out on his own as a trainer. Was struggling, was in New York struggling, and got a job. He worked as Tom Morley's assistant for a few years, then went back out on his own and moved back to Finger Lakes, and got two daughters and a wife, 12 horses, and wins a race at Saratoga. So, yeah, I just like to try to tell those stories. Those are fun. That's what the special has always been kind of about, is really trying to tell the stories about the little guys and the people who you might not have ever heard of or you might not know, a little bit more than just the name and a program. Let's find out who this person is, how they got here, and tell their story.
Yeah, I love it, too, because you pick up on things. You're an excellent interviewer. You always have been, and you pick up on things when you talk to people that are kind of under the radar. And that's one thing that I always try to do with our trainer talk show every Wednesday night when I visit for an hour with a specific trainer. And you've given me some ideas. I remember a few weeks back I had a chance to visit with young Eddie Davis, the son of jockey Robbie Davis, and I picked up on his story by reading your cup of coffee column, and he has a fantastic story. That was a lot of fun to visit with him. I talked to you haven't done a story on him yet, I don't think, but I talked to Connor Murphy on our edition of Trainer Talk on Wednesday night. And I know you and Connor are close friends. He comes from the steeplechase side of things. And his story is incredible too. So, you know, keep up the wonderful work with uncovering these stories, my friend.
Oh, that's what it's all about. Look, horse racing is full of them. I think that's, that's part of, it's part of our job as the media is to tell those stories. And also they're fun to tell, you know, they're the ones you want to write about. And, I think it's important to get those guys that are working hard, guys and girls working hard, and get them out there, tell their story, and that's what's beautiful about our sport is there's always a story somewhere between the owner, trainer, rider, breeder, horse, something. You groom, hot walker, there's always something to tell. So we got to try to keep doing that.
Well, Sean, one more cup of coffee segment yet to come this meet. It'll be next Saturday, closing weekend at Saratoga. Looking forward to catching up with you again, 9 o'clock Eastern. I'll encourage people to head over to thisishorseracing.com to download today's edition and to go back through all of the Saratoga specials throughout the meet. Some fantastic stories. And by the way, if you want to check out our trainer talk shows, the ones I just mentioned, the podcasts are up on our website at horseracingradio.net. Sean, listen, man, appreciate the visit. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll catch up next Saturday.
Thank you. Enjoyed it as always. You have a great weekend too.
All right, bud. And I want to remind you that all of our interviews here on the program brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. And what a wonderful time to do it. Embrace the Race, based in Saratoga, and their products, just, I tell you all the time, they're exceptional. You can't get better quality than what they offer at Embrace the Race. And it really shows that you are a fan of the lifestyle that this sport represents, that Sean and I were just talking about it. You are a fan of something bigger than just one trainer and one owner and one jockey. You're a fan of this sport and the lifestyle that it represents. So head over there now, embracetherace.com, and check it out, and make sure you let them know that the Baron sent you when you place your order there, and you won't be disappointed. All right, when I come back, going to turn our attention to the yearlings sales scene, and I'll do that with consigner Stuart Morris. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Get on the fast track to fun. This summer, Ellis Park Racing and Gaming has an action-packed scheduled summer meet at Ellis Park. The Run Happy Ellis Park Derby will be the track's first ever Kentucky Derby qualifying race. Preview the action August 2nd with the Run Happy Kentucky Downs Preview Day. Then, on August 9th, catch the excitement of the Run Happy Ellis Park Derby, where the winner is almost guaranteed a spot in the Kentucky Derby. We can't wait to make history with you this summer. Visit ellisparkracing.com for details.
Eclipse champion Blame. Ranked among the top stallions of his crop, Blame has sired over 50 stakes horses. His recent top performers include Kentucky Derby hopefuls Nadal, a $700,000 juvenile purchase and winner of the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby, and Shotsky, winner of the Grade 2 Remsen Stakes. Plus, recent Grade 1 performers Mississippi, Alandra, and Natalma Stakes winner Abscond. Outstanding value, outstanding results. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Social Paranoia comes up on the outside. Henley's Joy is in behind horses. Spinoff is there with Pluska Parfait. They're into the stretch, and it's Social Paranoia. Arriving at the eighth pole in front, Henley's Joy runs at him on the outside. It's these two with Henley's Joy and Social Paranoia stride for stride. Rock Emperor is finishing strongly on the far outside, but it's Henley's Joy in front, and Henley's Joy wins the Belmont Derby. Social Paranoia was second, Rock Emperor was third, and Digital Age was fourth in a final time of 158.29.
Mike Penna back with you on the Equine Forum on HRRN. That was Larry Colmus with the call of last year's Belmont Derby Invitational. Our good friend Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing and Henley's Joy capturing that event. And Henley's Joy, a graduate of the Stuart Morris program and his consignments, Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels, and you can visit his consignments at all of the upcoming major sales. And Stuart is with me now. I guess he could have told you all of that, but I decided to do it for him anyway. Stuart, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
I'm good. You know, you have, for a long time now, you have sponsored a segment on the show called the Industry Star of the Week, and that's typically when I read your commercial for you there. And I was thinking, what better industry star than Stuart Morris on this Saturday morning? So I'm making you the industry star of your own segment. How about that?
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I was thinking about, you know, your family's history with, you know, High Clear and your dad, Jeffrey, and, you know, going all the way back to, you know, gosh, I mean, before this, but I remember Silver Bullet Day and names like that.
Yep.
You know, your family has been so ingrained in this sport and played such an integral role in everything that we know with thoroughbred racing. That's got to be pretty cool.
Yes, it is. I'm a very fortunate man. You know, my dad was a first generation guy for our family, and
Was fortunate to get started and work really hard and have some owners give him some nice quality horses, and then grew himself from there. And he was actually a co-breeder of Silver Bullet Day with an old client of ours named John Crook. They had a lot of fun and used to buy a lot of mares. And that same year, actually, that we bred and raised and sold Silver Bullet Day, another really good filly named Arrested Dreams was in the same barn in the same fields and came out of the same shed row in the stall next to her there in July over at Fasig Tipton so many years ago. So I've been very lucky in my life to be around a lot of very nice horses. I never used to really understand it until I got old enough to figure it out. But until you're around those ones that are very, very good and elite, you don't know, because they really do breathe different air, act different. They just have a different way about them. And I've been very fortunate to be around a lot of horses like that and a lot of great mentors to help me get where I am today.
Did you always know that you wanted to be involved in this sport at some level?
Oh, yes. I mean, I can't remember anything else wanting to do in my life ever. I was the kid in the summer that was at the barn filling water buckets and opening gates in the afternoon instead of going to the pool with my brothers, or I was going to the races with my dad and coming home, sleeping in the back of the car or sleeping on the way to watch horses work at Churchill in the morning. And I was bit with the bug at a very young age. I engrossed myself in pedigree books and everything I get my hands on, and just never wanted to do anything else in my life ever. So I've been very fortunate in that as well.
Yeah, and you had a wonderful teacher in your father, Jeffrey. What type of teacher was he, and did he encourage you to follow in his footsteps in some respects?
I would say my father is from the old school. You were expected to know everything, whether you'd been taught or not. And if you didn't know, you better figure it out quick. There was a very high level of expectation for performance at all times. If you're going to try your hardest. If you're going to be there early. If you're going to stay there late. All those things. And he definitely helped me with my work ethic and a lot of education regarding the horses. And then I was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with folks like Bill Graves and several of the folks out there that have been able to help me and teach me as well as I go. So it's one of those industries, as you've heard a million people say, Mike, that you have to keep learning every day. And I've learned that you can often be educated from places you wouldn't expect to be taught things for the good and the bad. So I think that we all have to be learning every day in this game. If you're not, you will get left behind. So that's what I learned as well from my father. He was very aggressive about sending me out into the world to work for other people. I spent a summer at Lane's Inn, which was an awesome opportunity, working for Mike Klein and Todd Klonch and Eddie Kane, who's now the manager at Calumet, was the assistant yearling manager when I was there. I worked with Eddie for that summer and a bunch of other great folks at Lane's Inn that are still there. I spent a lot of time in Bill and Michelle Graves' barn when they had 505. I went to Australia and spent a season in Australia at Arrowfield with Peter Orton when he was running Arrowfield for Mr. Massara and their family down there. So my father did give me a very grounded base of education, but threw me out into the world to go learn from everywhere to make sure we weren't falling behind at Highclere and we knew all the new stuff and the best way to do things, stay current with the market and the industry.
Visiting with Stuart Morris here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and we're going to talk about some of the horses he'll be selling coming up at Fasig Tipton and at Keeneland with the yearling sales. And we'll talk about the market as it stands today and get Stuart's thoughts on that. But Stuart, before we do, I want to stick with your background for just a minute, because we talked about Silver Bullet Day, and she was obviously iconic to this sport. She was so, so good. Outside of Silver Bullet Day, tell me about a couple of the other horses that you've been around, either on your own or when you were working with your dad or other people, that are always just going to hold a special place in your heart.
Well, one horse that I remember from my times at Dapple, when I left my father and went to run Dapple Stud for Mike Akers and his partners, we were there for our short window of time, and Patch Attack came off our crop in the first year, and she was a cool filly. But one horse that I will remember for a long, long time and probably always is a little bay son of Stormy Atlantic called Stormy Liberal. I was fortunate enough to foal and race him out there with Dan Cunniff and the rest of the team at Dapple, and we took that colt to Saratoga, and He was a little bit of an immature kind of fellow, a little bit of a Mayfoal, and we had to put a lot of pressure on him to get him ready for Saratoga, with the knowledge that if he wasn't going to make it or kind of fell behind, we would just scratch him and go to the sale later in the year in October at Faith Gibson. But that colt handled that pressure as good as any yearling I've ever had. He was a different kind of horse. He was just cool to be around. He would, one of the most willing yearlings I've ever been raised around and prepped, just a really, really cool horse. And we took him to Saratoga and he handled the ship great and acted like an old soul up there. And it was kind of interesting because he wouldn't have been what you would call your typical Saratoga pedigree at the time, but he was darn sure a Saratoga physical. And it was very interesting watching everyone try and figure out what he was worth and how much he would be paid for. And my boss, Mike Akers, at the time went in there and I think we tried to make him bring 175 or 200 and we R&A'd him. And before we got him back to the barn, like 3 minutes later, I had five calls. Mike had two texts and there were three guys waiting at the shed row to try and buy him. And, Mike ended up selling him to Waiver Tree with Kieran Dunn and they took him down to the 2-year-old sale and he ended up in Peter Miller's barn and the rest is history. But that horse was an interesting horse because, I remember him because we had to do a lot of extra work with him and put a lot of pressure on him and feed him extra and work him extra and really bring him along in a way that was challenging. And he thrived on the process and the pressure. And that lent itself out to his, tenacity to go be a racehorse and obviously win a couple of Breeders' Cups and the Cups Award and do all those things. So I would say he would be another one that I remember, very well, just as a horse that'll probably follow me for a long time.
Yeah, what a fantastic story. And, you know, the beauty of the yearling sales, which, again, are coming up right after the Kentucky Derby this year. Things are rescheduled. Of course, we would normally be talking about the completion of the Saratoga sale in early August with Fasig Tipton, but we're not. We've rescheduled that sale for September 9th and 10th here in Lexington, and we'll see a lot of top yearlings going under the gavel those days. And then the Keeneland September sale coming up the 13th to the 25th. Stuart, shifting these things a bit later, does that it must give you more time as a consigner to get these horses ready and prepared. Is that an advantage or no?
Well, I think it can be for sure. And it could also be somewhat of a disadvantage. Some horses, and there's fewer of them, which is why the summer sales are so hard to fill with horses that are really mature and ready. Some horses are as good as they can be in the summer, in July and early August, and they'll be as good as they would have been then. Those horses might be at a slight disadvantage because the rest of the guys that are a little more immature will probably have caught up now. I think that there's definitely a lot of horses that were able to make the quote-unquote select Fasig Tipton venue just because of maturity and time opportunities that wouldn't have been able to afford that luxury in the past. So I think that could be a minor impact there. I don't know how much it will have on a vast number of horses. Obviously, with more time, it gives us luxuries to have more time to prepare them and pick our spots. We still had to, as a group of consigners and sellers and breeders, we did have to make a lot of these decisions early in the summer in May and early June because at the time we still didn't know what was happening for the summer sales. So, you know, I think a lot of us, a lot of my brethren and breeders for sure are getting chomping at the bit and excited because we've been kind of planning for this like we were going to be at the summer, 45 and 30 days ago. In July and in Saratoga, then we obviously didn't make those venues this year. So I think there's a lot of us chomping at the bit, and I think there's a lot of buyers that are excited and chomping at the bit too, ready to go get to work and reload and start again for 2021.
Yeah, well, you're going to have big consignments at, certainly at Keeneland. You're going to have several horses that you're selling at Fasig Tipton too, and no doubt top horses. I tell people every single week that they need to stop by and see your consignment if they're looking for their next big-time horse because you've been part of so many throughout your career. But when you look at the market now and the way that things have changed and you're not going to have the big crowd as you normally would on hand to look at these horses in person, there will still be people, but a lot of people will be buying horses virtually now and doing it in a different format, a different fashion. How does that affect the market, Stuart? Where do you see it when we get to September?
Well, I don't know that I can say how it will affect it because obviously none of us know in this world we're in today. I can tell you that having been a participant in varying stages of degrees at three of the two-year-old sales this year, one in March in Ocala when all this began, and one again down there in late May, early June, and another one in July. In the March and the late April sale that was in June and May, there were fewer people at the sale grounds, but not a ghost town. There were still plenty of folks moving through, looking at horses and doing the inspection. Certainly the agents and the trainers, definitely a noticed lack of owners and folks that would come along because they enjoy it. They aren't making the trip now, but for the most part, the folks that are buying for themselves or the agents acting on behalf of owners, I didn't notice a dramatic reduction in people there, bar the international folks that couldn't make it over due to their travel restrictions. But obviously less people, that will definitely be an impact. I do think that we have been through enough cycles of these sales in this current world we're in that there'll be a comfort level for the buyer base, which I think is the most important thing. Certainly the agents and all the trainers and folks that were participating as buyers in the two-year-old markets will be familiar with it. It's a very easy, simple process, and I would assume and hope that the yearling buyers will take to it like the two-year-old folks did and will carry on and do it in a new way, but hopefully a successful way.
Yeah, talking with Stuart Morris here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He'll be selling at the upcoming Fasig Tipton sale and Keeneland, as I mentioned. Stuart, let's talk about a couple of the horses that you're going to be selling. If you want to highlight them, this is your opportunity. Who are some of the horses that, when people stop by your consignment, they should be checking out?
Well, I'm very fortunate in both Fasig and Keeneland. I have a nice group of horses I'm proud of. I think I've got quality horses that'll be well bought and well sold everywhere from 50 and 60,000, hopefully up into a couple hundred thousand or more, certainly. At Fasig in particular, I'm fortunate to have a very good son at Not This Time. Obviously the sire of the week today. I've got a beautiful colt by him going over there. I've got a lovely Blame colt headed that way. Some real nice New York breds, quality toneless filly, really a pretty good group overall, but I guess the highlights of my barn, I would suspect, will probably be the Not This Time and the Blame. But overall, I'm very proud of the group of bringing over there. And then over at Keeneland, I've got a one-horse consignment in book two, a very nice run, Happy Colt, for Curtis and Linda Green at Belmar Farm. I'm very proud of him. He's a lovely, big, strong horse, very athletic, good pedigree under him, and hopefully we'll have some success. And then on into book three and book four, I have some quality horses for Jimmy Chapman, some more for Curtis Green, some quality horses, a nice Declaration of War colt, a good McLean's Music colt. I just saw a real nice Staffordshire filly that just got off the truck from out of town that's going to be going into book four with a nice pedigree. So I've got a pretty good group overall, and I'm proud to bring them out there to the markets and see what happens.
Well, before I let you go, I know you have other things to get to on this Saturday morning, but you mentioned the pedigree of a lot of these horses, and you have some top sires and some really good dams that will be represented in your consignment. When I've talked to buyers in the past, one thing that they'll consistently talk about is finding a horse that looks like they're athletic and trying to buy an athlete, and sometimes the pedigree comes second. When you're selling a horse, Stuart, are you more concerned about having a horse that brings good pedigree, or do you want horses that appear to be athletes? How does that work from your perspective?
Personally, for me, you start with the horse, and you have to have an athlete and a quality animal with respective quality vet work, and you have to start with those things, because without the athlete, there's only so far it's going to carry you. The real blessing and the real opportunity as a seller happens when you get lucky and catch that storm of the very good pedigree, the hot pedigree, the lights out pedigree with the superior physical. And that's when things can happen and get a little silly sometimes. So that's the hope, but obviously, but for me, I would fall in the camp of physical first. And then we go from there with the pedigrees. And then typically for me, the pedigree determines ultimate value, but without physicality, there's not much value to begin with. You have to start with a nice horse, and then the pedigree ultimately determines how much you're going to get paid for said horse, but it has to be a nice horse to begin with.
Well, when you listen to him talk and you hear this interview with Stuart Morris, you can see why he's had so much success in this game over the years, and no doubt more success to follow. Make sure you stop by and say hello to him at the Fasig Tipton and the Keeneland Sales. Stuart, really appreciate the visit and appreciate all your support. And, hey, congratulations on being named our Industry Star of the Week on this Saturday morning.
Thank you so much. One thing else I wanted to say, too, Mike, I think that just on the markets in general, I've been talking to my friends that were in the sellers and buyers in the Louisiana and Texas sales that just finished last week. And everybody seems to be very comfortable. Those markets are kind of as usual, somewhat depressed and that maybe not quite the electric prices, but plenty of money at all levels and plenty of interest at all levels. And there wasn't a dramatic notice of a depressed market to be selling into or buying out of. So hopefully that's a good indicator that that will carry on for us into Kentucky and the rest of the year, that we'll have a respectable, solid market, maybe not electric and getting the whole crazy extra money, but it's fair and we can all sell our horses at a good price and go on to 2021 in a positive way when this is all behind us.
Yeah, great, great words from Stuart Morris, and I'm glad to hear that everybody in those other sales seems to be coming out of there and walking away with a positive attitude. That's good to hear. And Stuart, all the best in September when you start selling. And again, thanks for all the support of what we do here on the network. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I'm happy to be and proud to be part of your organization and any small piece that I am. You guys do a great job and you're a major asset to our industry as a whole. Thank you guys for everything you do. Have a great
day. All right. Appreciate it, brother. Yeah, you too. Stuart Morris here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Want to remind you that Woodbine, yeah, our friends north of the border, the Queen's Plate at home experience, much like they're doing with the Kentucky Derby, because fans are not allowed in attendance, on September 12th, 2020. That's September 12th of this year. Just reading the copy. Woodbine is going to bring you the 161st running of the Queen's Plate at home experience. Not allowed in person, you can still join Woodbine from home as they bring you the Queen's Plate experience directly to fans across the country like never before. You can follow them on Instagram at WoodbineTB for the latest news, content, and contest for this year's Queen's Plate at home. First post on Saturday, September 12th is 1 p.m. Eastern. For more racing and horse player information, just visit woodbine.com. Some cool stuff there. That Queen's Plate is, I mean, obviously it's the Canadian bred version of the Kentucky Derby. And it is really a spectacle, at least in most years. I know that it will be toned down this year because there will be no fan participation. So much like the Kentucky Derby, a lot of things will be scaled back. But it is still a jewel of a race north of the border. All right, going to get to another break. I'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adina Springs bred and raced Awesome Again's best son in Horse of the Year and Hall of Famer, Ghost Sapper. Now one of the most consistently brilliant sires this century, producing 11% black type winners, 6% graded winners, and 17% black type horses, highlighted by 12 grade one winners, 8 millionaires, and 5 champions. Adina Springs also bred and raced Ghost Sapper's best son, champion, multiple grade one winner, and Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic grade one double.
It's going to be a photo finish, and it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Believe in the first Shaman Ghost yearlings appearing at the sales this fall. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Win one of two qualifying seats to the $3 million National Horse Players Championship in Las Vegas during the inaugural Ruidoso Downs Handicapping Challenge. This on-track event on August 29th offers national and local players a chance to win expenses-paid seats to the NHC in February 2021. Register today at raceruidoso.com. Ruidoso Downs Racetrack and Casino, home to the world's richest quarter horse race, the $3 million All-American Futurity. Guaranteed excitement? You bet.
The test of time. There is no better example than Mill Ridge Farm.
Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as a pillar of the turf. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year, nearly 2 per year. If you're looking for success in the thoroughbred business, consider Millridge Farm and its consulting arm, Nicoma Bloodstock, for it is proven and tested over time.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And now, as they round the far turn, it's Sleepy Eyes Todd from Pluska Parfait. Running to love you, levels out a bit in third. Sleepy Eyes Todd off the turn in front and opening up a 5-length lead. Sleepy Eyes Todd well in charge with a 16th to go. It's going to be Sleepy Eyes Todd and Carlos Delgado coast to coast in the Charlestown Classic. He won it by 8 lengths. The biggest margin of victory in Charlestown Classic history belongs to Carlos Delgado and Sleepy Eyes Todd in 150-4.
Well, that's the way it sounded last night here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Paul Espinoza with the call of the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic, and what a race it was for Sleepy Eyes Todd. As you heard him say, the largest margin of victory in the history of the race. It was the 12th consecutive year that we have seen the Charlestown Classic, and some unbelievable horses, you recall, have come through there, including the great Game On Dude. And Sleepy Eyes Todd now has his name etched among so many of the notables. And when you take a look at his form coming in, this was a horse who had run some monster races the last couple, but not against this caliber of competition. And he was extremely well-traveled. My analyst on the broadcast last night, Bobby Newman, pointed out the fact that when you look at his PPs, you see Oaklawn, Canterbury, Remington, Sam Houston, Fairgrounds, Fawner, Lone Star, and now Charlestown. He can take his show on the road. And he proved that last night. Wire to wire, you know, he just ran them off their feet. There was other speed in this race. Running to Love You, the defending champ, the West Virginia bred, had early speed. He found himself sitting in about fifth in the early going. Math Wizard and War Story, who were among the favorites, were just too far back. And War Story has made that late run in that race every single year. It was his fourth consecutive year running in the Charlestown Classic. Just couldn't do it because Sleepy Eyes Todd just took it to him right from the start. And the son of Paddy Oprado rolled to a huge victory for trainer Miguel Silva and jockey Carlos Delgado, owners Thumbs Up Racing. So congratulations to them. What a performance by Sleepy Eyes Todd last night. That, by the way, came on the heels of Fly On Angel's victory in the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks, which was the race preceding the Classic last night. Fly On Angel, a 3-year-old daughter of Palace Malice, with an upset victory for trainer Claudio Gonzalez under Freddie Peltroche for owner Joseph Besecker. And this was a nice effort by Fly On Angel. And again, an upset she wasn't expected. She was 12-1 on the morning line. She was facing the likes of Tonalist Shape and Wicked Whisper, who was a Grade 1 winner. But Fly On Angel proved that she could handle those tight turns and that bull ring of a racetrack at Charlestown last night. And she came rolling to get the victory. So congratulations to all the connections from those races at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. And it was cool. You know, one of the things that was really neat for us, and we broadcast the race remotely with all the social distancing protocols in place. We broadcast it remotely. But it was neat as you were watching the video coverage to see fans lined up along the rail. They could have up to 600 fans. Now, that's not a lot when you consider the fact that the dining room is usually jam-packed at Charlestown on that night, holds more than 1,000 people, or roughly about 1,000. But 600 fans. I don't know if they had 600, but they probably did, because there were people milling around. They had masks on, and they were watching a wonderful night of thoroughbred racing. So congratulations to the folks at Charlestown, Eric Zimney and his team, for pulling that off. And again, Paul Espinosa with a couple of rock-solid calls. First time, by the way, that they ran those two races, the Oaks and the Classic, on the same card. The Classic was supposed to be run in April. The Oaks was supposed to be run later in September. They combined them because of the rescheduling. And I think it maybe we found something new here. I don't know if they'll do this every year. I haven't talked to Eric about it, but boy, wouldn't that be cool to see those two races run back-to-back on a Super Friday, a Super Saturday. That would be really neat. All right, poll question today. Let's update you on the poll question before I get to our KTOB Spotlight segment. But the poll question today, will Belmont and Travers winner, Tis the Law, sweep 2020's version of the quote-unquote quadruple crown? You have three choices. Heck yeah, no shot. And the last one is quadruple crown. Maybe the Baron's lost his marbles a little bit. But heck yeah, 62% of HRN Nation saying, you know what? Yeah, we think he's going to do it. And you'd have to think, the way that Tis the Law has dominated the competition in both the Belmont and the Travers, you have to think that there's a good chance he could sweep the whole thing. I guess a better question, and I've asked this question with a poll question before, when the restructuring of the races was first announced, the distance reduction to the Belmont, the spacing of the races being all different, the timing being completely different, running them in the fall, in late summer into fall, as opposed to running them in the spring, will you consider Tis the Law a legitimate Triple Crown winner if he wins the three Triple Crown races? The Belmont, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness. And yes, they're out of order, I know. Will you consider him a legitimate Triple Crown winner? Or will he always have an asterisk next to his name? I'll tell you what. I said from the beginning that there's no way that this would be considered a Triple Crown. And I still don't know if in the true sense of the Triple Crown, you consider it a Triple Crown. Asking a horse in the spring of his three-year-old season to win three demanding races over a five-week span, that's a Triple Crown. This is a little bit different. Well, it's a lot of bit different. But if he wins all four of these races, and yeah, say what you want about the spacing, month apart, but if he wins all four of these, the Belmont, the Travers, the Derby, the Preakness. What more do you want? What more can you ask of a horse? As Sean Clancy said earlier, he's cheering for him. I think everybody's cheering for him. Barkley Tag, Sakatoga, Jack Knowlton, Manny Franco, good people. And they have dedicated their lives to this sport, especially a guy like Barkley and Jack. Manny Franco has two, but his life a little bit shorter than the other two. Not as old as the other two. We'll see if Tis the Law can continue that momentum, but boy, what a feat it would be. All right, it is time now for your monthly Kentucky Bred Spotlight segment, and I shine the spotlight on the Kentucky Bred program. And listen, it is going to be a September to remember here in the Bluegrass. And although the Kentucky Derby has moved to a different date, it remains the world's most important race. And following this year's Run for the Roses on September 5th, two of the biggest yearling sales of the year, you just heard me talk about them with Stuart Morris, are going to make Kentucky the epicenter of the thoroughbred business. The Fasig Tipton Selected Yearling Showcase takes place September 9th and 10th, and then the Keeneland September Yearling Sale, the 14th to the 26th. And now that racing has resumed in Kentucky at Churchill Downs with all of the upcoming meets, Ellis Park, of course, Keeneland coming up in October, we salute Kentucky's industry stakeholders for coming together under these unprecedented circumstances and look forward to September, which is shaping up as the greatest month in the history of Kentucky Horse Racing. For more information about the latest on racing and breeding in the Bluegrass or basing your thoroughbred operation in Kentucky, all you have to do is visit KentuckyBred.org. And I'm back to wrap up the show right after this. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti!
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4/5. Caraconti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
The Kentucky Derby. The most exciting 2 minutes in sports.
Mind that bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
And it is all Barbaro in a sublime performance.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby.
American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
Saturday, September 5th, right here on HRRN.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Don't forget that inside the August 29th issue of Blood Horse Magazine, you won't want to miss many feature stories that include Franco speaking. That's jockey Manny Franco, who talks about his rise to the fore aboard Tis the Law, the real thing that's authentic. And the latest Peter Blumbred success story, that's by Lenny Shulman. And, of course, the Blood Horse Market Watch, taking a look at the 2020 Kentucky Derby and a preview of that event. You can download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their special that's going on now as you follow the road to the Kentucky Derby. 10 weekly issues for only $10. Go to bloodhorse.com/TC. Hey, my good friend Keith Evans and his grandson Jackson tuned into the program. Just got a text from them. Want to say hello to Keith and to Jackson. Appreciate you both joining me here this morning. Don't forget, our Derby Week coverage kicks off next week, Tuesday, 8 a.m. Eastern, with the first of three Derby Countdown shows. Head to horseracingradio.net to check out a complete broadcast schedule and follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Pennett. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Derby Week. And hey, getting closer, go Steelers.